This is Classic Grain Hamcast number 22 for June 27, 2020. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. During the years Hap Holly, KC9RP, produced his rain reports from 1990 to 2019, he managed to interview some of the movers and shakers of amateur radio. One he missed was Leo Meyerson, W0GFQ. Meyerson put Council Bluffs, Iowa on the map with his World Radio Laboratories, distributor of ham gear by Globe and Galaxy. The late Glenn Baxter, K1MAN, spoke with Leo in 1988.
Was World Radio Laboratories the largest ham distributor in its peak?
In its peak, yes, in the middle 50s.
What would the next largest distributor be in those days?
I would say Henry.
Henry Radio in California?
Yeah.
How big was World Radio Laboratories in comparison to companies such as Hallicrafters, Hammerland, and others?
Oh, we were right up in there. I never knew what their sales were. I know what our sales were. World Radio was one of the distributors of Globe Electronics, which was the manufacturing division. It was a separate division from World Radio. World Radio bought from Globe just like all the other distributors did. Now, if you look at it that way, we were the largest of the equipment made by Globe. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we were the largest, because I really believe that Hallicrafter probably was, that was the only business they were in. I know how much Hallicrafters we used to buy. Globe Electronics was one company, which we finally sold in 1959. And then when they moved away, why, we formed Galaxy. Now, those are manufacturing companies and have nothing to do, as far as World Radio is concerned, except World Radio was a distributor or a dealer for both of those companies.
You owned all three companies?
I and some of the family, yes.
Was the Globe King the largest seller?
The Globe King in volume was probably the biggest seller in volume, but the Globe Scout in numbers probably was the biggest seller of them all. That was a little Heising system of modulation. It went from 6 meters to 160, and it had phone as well as CW. It was a very popular rig. It had 60 watts. I found many of them in commercial service in South America.
Leo, tell us about your musical career and how you got into electronics as a business.
Well, it's rather an interesting story. My father was a grocer in the days when the downtown grocery store was the store to trade at, if you know what I mean. He wanted me to go into business with him a couple of years after I got married. I preferred to go into radio business, and he asked me why I would want to go into radio business, and I told him that I was having a bit of difficulty in getting some of the gear that I desired. I had to wait 2 or 3 weeks, sometimes longer. Things were back-ordered, and of course, in those early days, we had to build all of our own equipment. So he said, well, how much money would you need? And I said, well, Dad, I think I could get started on $500. Now, don't forget, this was back in 1935. $500 in those days would probably equate to $5,000 a day. He says, well, you can't get started for $500. I'll give you $1,000. And when you lose that, will you come into the grocery business with me? And I said, okay, Dad, and we shook hands on that.
Was there any doubt in your mind that you would have to deliver on that promise?
Well, I had certain apprehensions, but had a great deal of zeal and ambition.
Well, what about your musical career?
I became a ham and really got into music as a profession about the same time, 1928. Well, I take that back. I started playing the pipe organ in the Salem movies in 27. I was a very avid listener to broadcast stations, and they were popping up every day. It was through listening to these various stations that I at one time picked up a W9, and that was our prefix before 1947. We were part of the 9th District instead of the 0 District. I heard this W9 playing records, which was not unusual back in 26 and 27, and I sent him a card that I had heard his station and wanted to know more about it because his call letters were so different. And he came back with his card saying he was a radio amateur and he hoped that he would be able to talk to me on the air sometime. And that tickled my fancy, and I looked up a couple of radio amateurs. 6 months later, I had my license. my musical experience started back when I was 7 years old. I started taking piano lessons. I took for 6 years. I really didn't care much for the classical that I was taking, and I got mixed up with a group of musicians called the Iowans, and we used to play for many dances Friday, Saturday, and Sundays. And
oh, you used to play for the silent movies, didn't you?
Yes, I got into that by a funny series of events. I knew the owner of a Liberty Theater. It was a small theater that really dealt in westerns in those days. Mr. Harding stopped me on the street one day and he said, "Leo, you play the piano and I want you to play the organ for me." He said, "I'm going to lose one of my assistant organists." And I said, "I don't know anything about an organ." He said, "Well, you'll learn." So I said, well, I was crazy enough and young enough, I said, well, I'll try it. And I took to it very well. Later, I became the head organist of the theater. Enjoyed it so much that I thought I was going to make it my profession. But Vitaphone, they called it in those days, came in, talking pictures. And my dad very wisely told me I was barking up the wrong tree to continue playing the organ in the silent movies when people that I respected and admired were playing the organ in Omaha, a much bigger city than Council Bluffs, were losing their jobs because of the talking pictures. So I gave that idea up and went aimlessly to the University of Nebraska, not knowing what I wanted to do.
Tell me about the early days in your electronics business. I mean, what did you do with your $1,000?
Well, I went to Chicago, for one thing. Went to Radio Row there and picked up what we probably would call surplus equipment today. And I picked up some parts, things that I knew might be saleable because they were the kind of things that I desired when I was building my station. Had the stuff brought back to Council Bluffs. Started business in a rickety old place. It was an old log cabin. I can remember on a cold wintry day, the snow used to come through the cracks of the building. I used to go out on the road. Of course, those days we were trying to sell to radio dealers that were selling radios and needed parts, and also to some of the broadcast stations that were starting up. I remember a couple of them in Shenandoah, Iowa. I also can remember many a night that I spent in my car trying to save a few bucks instead of going to so-called motels in those days that you could get for a couple of bucks a night.
Was the business primarily a parts business, and when did it make the transition over into manufacturing ham gear and things like that?
It was basically a parts business. We had difficulty getting parts because there were other distributors around that didn't want me to have anything. I was an upstart young man, and some of those people were established with Atwater, Kemp, Majestic Radios, that type of thing, which was quite popular in those days. I decided that perhaps I should canvass the local amateurs in a 4 or 5 state area. And I had a Catholic priest friend that had introduced me to my wife through a series of situations, and he used to do a lot of advertising for me, you know, Trade with Leo, that type of thing. And I used to put out mimeograph circulars, and I started really getting business from the radio amateurs. And that's what turned me in that direction. I used to hear from some of these fellows, and they say, "Leo, how about a kit?" Because there wasn't any such thing as ready-made commercial equipment in those early days. A few of the transformer companies put out a few kits, like a Stancor, that was standard transformer, and Thordison, but they really weren't what the fellows wanted. And we started putting out kits, and they started to move, and then a few of the fellows said, "How about wiring these kits for me, Leo?" I said, "Okay, there'll be a small charge, of course." And they said, "Well, we're willing to pay it." And that's what got us started into building some of our early transmitters. The earliest one is a WRL-70, but I can never locate one of those things. But we started building those, had 6L6s in them.
The name WRL-70, where did the 70 come from?
The 70 watts.
You're listening to a 1988 interview with Leo Meyerson, W0GFQ, the man behind WRL, World Radio Labs. We'll resume this interview by Glenn Baxter, K1MAN, in a moment. This is Classic Rain, Hamcast number 22. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Classic Rain from www.therainreport.com.
We started building a 150-watt transmitter, and just about the time we got rolling, Pearl Harbor stopped us altogether. We were stopped dead in our tracks. No amateurs. All the amateurs were told to dismantle their equipment, take their antennas down, and I was really in bad shape from the standpoint of business because we had none.
When World War II hit, what did you do then, and how did you get a new business going?
In my early days, I played around with crystals back in 29 and 30 when they first came out. I was licensed in 1928. I had heard through the grapevine that quartz crystals were badly needed. One of the local manufacturers called Howard Manufacturing Company had told me about that, and he was making the holders for the FT-243 crystals. I got in touch with a friend of mine who used to cut quartz in his basement. I said, why don't you come in the crystal business with me? I understand they need them badly. And at that time, he was working for the gas company in Fort Dodge, Iowa, making $200 a month. Al says, you know, I'd love to do that with you, Leo. But he says, you know, I'm captain in the reserves, and I'm liable to be called at any time. I said, well, let's find out about it. And then we called this chief officer of the Signal Corps in Washington, D.C., and told him that we could make quartz crystals. And he says, are you sure? I said, sure. And he said, if you can make quartz crystals, we'll see that you two fellows are deferred. And he told us who to get in touch with, which was Motorola. At that time, they were called Galvan Manufacturing Company. We got in touch with Motorola, and again, they asked us the same question. Can you make crystals? We said, well, we think we can. They said, now, here are the frequencies we want. They gave us five frequencies, and you get them to us as quickly as you can, six of each. Well, we worked for 3 days and three nights getting those 30 crystals ready, and we took a overnight train, Burlington, into Chicago, took a bus over to their plant, and by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we were told that the crystals passed, and we walked out of there with an order for 80,000 crystals.
This has been the first of two excerpts from a 1988 Glenn Baxter interview with amateur radio pioneer Leo Meyerson, W0GFQ. We'll conclude this interview next time. But before we go, I have a humorous piece about Field Day, an annual event that many of you will have missed by the time you hear this. It's a short commentary from 1988, written and voiced by broadcaster Chuck Bullitt, W-A-1-A-E-K.
Here we are, the last weekend in June. You know, I revere this weekend, Field Day. I've held this weekend in such high regard for years now on my social calendar that I couldn't imagine doing anything else. Wish I could say the same for my wife. You should have been here the year the weekend of all weekends of Hamdom accidentally coincided with her honeymoon. That was a woeful year for me, but well, it was worth it, though. Hey, I've decided that this is going to be different. Field Day 88 is going to be humdinger. I've got everything all set here. I've already bought the local sporting goods complete supply of mosquito repellent. I still say that here in these parts, mosquitoes and black flies should be given the honorary title of state bird, though. After all, some of them easily weigh in at more than the current holder of that title. That's the chickadee, a real small bird. And you know what? It seems that the biggest and best of these little nasty mosquitoes and black flies only come out on Field Day weekend. Field Day, huh? 24 to 30 grueling hours of scrunching those bug bites. And just as many hours of scratching my head trying to figure out just why this antenna won't tune the way it did when I put it together 3 weeks before. Which brings to mind an interesting point. Why didn't I double-check the feed line and the antenna before coming out to this bug and critter-infested swamp? I guess I really wasn't as prepared as I'd hoped to be. Forgot to restock that first aid kit, too, after that accident I had last month. No bandages and tape, and I just cut myself, and boy. Wait a minute. What if this had been the real thing? Maybe it wasn't as prepared as I thought he was. Just wait till next year, though. I'm going to have a checklist. That's what I need. And maybe more than one, too. Maybe one for camping supplies, maybe one for tools, one for the radio gear, maybe even a departure list for the station wagon. Guess I never really considered what it really takes to be ready for that next big hurricane or tropical storm or any emergency. And what about all the other local ham bones around here? How come they're not out here with me scratching away? Maybe we have like a call-up telephone tree. You know, I call Phil, Phil calls Nate and Davis, and Nate and Davis each call two other operators. You know, we could have a real contingent out here in no time. Why didn't I think of that before? Now, what about this antenna? Oh, yeah. Maybe, suppose it does work better when you plug the coax connector into the tuner. Whew, that was simple enough. Now, where did I put that bug spray? Ouch. Oh, this is Chuck Bullitt, WB1AEK, reporting from Murphy's Swamp, Hannibal's Crossing, deep within the wilds of Maine. CQ Field Day. CQ Field Day.
And that's a wrap on Classic Grain Hamcast 22, posted June 27, 2020, Field Day weekend. We'll conclude Glenn Baxter, K1MAN's 1988 interview with ham radio pioneer Leo Meyerson, W1GFQ, next time. Classic Rain is copyright 1988-2020 Rain. All rights reserved. Classic Rain Hamcast number 23 will post July 11th. Don't forget to take a look at HAP's GoFundMe page on the rainreport.com. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network. Keep on hamming!